to Decaf and Debunk, a podcast all about busting myths and bringing light to popular and sometimes confusing topics in nutrition and health, because we all could use a little less caffeine and a little more science. I'm your host, Hope.
And Jesse.
And today we are going to talk about a very fun topic of low carbohydrate diets. And this is going to kick off our series that is looking into fad diets, the science behind them, why they might look like they work, what benefits they might have, what drawbacks they might have. So not necessarily just burning them all at the stake, but exploring from an evidence-based perspective what is behind them. Yeah. So, and we're going to start with low-carb diets. And Jesse always asks her students to do one fun thing in class, and I have moved it into our podcast. How would you rank the following carbohydrates in your life? Rice, bread, pasta, and potatoes. Jesse?
So I asked this to my class like last fall, and I got some really enthusiastic response from students, and they've kind of changed my perspective on some things, like with respect to like pasta. Does pasta also include noodles like ramen and things like that? So that brings up a whole different kind of avenue. But in general, bread is always top tier for me. Like 100%, I'm a bread person. I'll eat bread in any form. One of my favorite forms of bread is like a good soft pretzel with salt and mustard. Like that, I love salt.
Oh, pretzels. You would consider soft pretzels to go into bread?
It's a bread. It's a bread category. A pretzel is a bread, Hope.
Okay. That's fair enough. That's not what I automatically would go to in my head.
So how white, about like squishy wraps? Bread? That would probably fall in bread to me.
Okay.
Like wheat-based products.
Yeah.
Well, I guess pasta is a wheat-based product, but like
yeah,
bready products. Oh. So bread's always top tier, and rice and pasta are usually bottom. Rice is usually like the lowest for me.
Pasta is the bottom?
I don't love pasta.
Ugh.
So it's bread, potatoes, then pasta, then rice for me, usually. Rice and pasta kind of go back and
forth. Why is rice at the bottom for you?
It's just not exciting.
Okay.
Like, which is the opposite of my husband. My husband's like, rice is the most versatile, which is like a lot of the justification that I got from a lot of the students when I posed this question was pretty much everyone's justification for why their favorite carb was their favorite was because it's so versatile, which they all are.
Like, yeah.
I mean, you can have so many different forms of bread and so many different types of rice, and like the way you cook it is different, which just really then comes down to like preference. But rice is not interesting to me. I don't really enjoy it.
Mine is definitely pasta is number one, but I know that from two perspectives. Number one was that when I was growing up, my grandmother always used to make pasta on Sunday nights. So it has a nostalgia part for me, but also it's the easiest lazy food ever. Like I can put noodles on the stovetop, boil them and throw in some veggies and sauce. And it feels like a complete, I don't know, meal. Yeah. When I didn't have to do that much, especially since you introduced me to Goodles, which are my most favorite now. If you haven't tried Goodles,
I literally just got off a client call where I was like, have you tried Goodles?
If you have not tried Goodles, you should go try them because they're very good and they're made from chickpeas. Chickpeas?
I think Goodles different. It's a mix of a lot of different ones.
Oh.
It's not which just
at,
like
at least has chickpeas
pasta.
And maybe pea protein. Something. But they are so good. And it also has fiber, so it's good for your poop.
And protein. It's got a solid amount of protein.
Yeah.
But yeah,
so
great.
I have definitely shifted to Goodles being my lazy meal because I get the fiber in there too that I don't always get if I do regular pasta. But so pasta is always number one. Then probably rice would be number two, only because of the frequency that I eat foods that also come with rice. And I would feel like deprived if I was like, well, you can never have hibachi food again. You can never have sushi again. I would feel very sad. And then potatoes and then bread.
Ugh,
I think bread would be at the end.
Like literally the opposite. We're opposite.
Yeah.
Ugh.
But I think bread, it goes at the end, because if I had to think about repetitiveness, I would not be able to eat bread repetitively, I don't think.
No, give me a crusty loaf of sourdough and some like oil and vinegar to dip it in, and I will smash the entire loaf. Like, bread is like, I will eat all forms. Anything that's like bready, love. Like pizza crust, like lots of people don't like the crust. Like, the crust is my favorite part because it's dippable. So yep. Good. Love bread.
Last night, Bruce and I went out for pizza and he ate all of my crusts. I just eat only the middle of the pizza.
Jared knows to like hand me his crust as he finishes his pizza.
That's funny. So, well, but it actually is for a real reason why people crave carbohydrates. So, because our bodies need them. What in general would you think about the importance of carbohydrates, or how would you communicate that to someone in your life?
So from we both teach all the metabolism courses, so we love to speak about why our bodies need carbs. But carbohydrates is a massive class of foods, essentially. And there's different types of carbohydrates. But the main goal of carbohydrates, for the most part, is to provide our body with energy. So carbs end up being one of the main fuel sources for our cells to do work and produce ATP, which is how we exist and thrive and survive. And so there's a lot of different, like I said, types of carbs. We have like simple carbohydrates, which is like our simple sugars, and they all have a place. Like, simple sugars gives us really quick energy. They don't take a lot of time to digest, things like that. But then we have like complex carbohydrates, which take a little more longer to digest. And then you can also get into things like fiber. And so fiber is technically a carbohydrate, but a lot of times when you're thinking about it, we usually like building a healthy plate. We're like carbs, fat, protein, and fiber. So fiber is technically a carbohydrate, but we like to think of it separately because fiber is, you know, you could eat carbs and not have fiber, and fiber has its own benefits. But carbohydrates are very important, and I think they get a bad rap a lot of times, and you probably see it too when working with clients, and you'll ask them to do like a 24-hour like dietary recall and just say like, what did we eat yesterday? And you'll quickly kind of calculate how many carbs you think they're eating, and generally speaking, about 50% of our calories need to come from carbs. Usually.
Yeah. Like, and range, sometimes more if people are exercising frequently.
Yeah.
But I definitely see that as well. And I also commonly see people saying, well, I don't eat sugar. Mm-hmm. Not understanding that sugar is a form of a carbohydrate. They're equivalent when you look at like metabolism. So
yeah.
That's the other thing that I see commonly mixed up. But yes, and a lot of people don't understand that the most important reason why we need carbohydrates is because our brain preferentially uses glucose, which is what your body breaks down all carbohydrates into, is glucose. Your brain preferentially uses that to function. And a large chunk of your metabolic energy in the day goes to running your brain. Yeah. So you literally need glucose in order for your body to function well. And if you're not taking it in through your diet, your body has other ways of making glucose available from other sources.
Yeah.
So that is probably the biggest misconception that I see.
Yeah. And the RDA for carbohydrates is set at around like 130-ish grams. I think it's 135 to be specific, if I'm pulling that from my mind correctly. But in general, that is, I even talk about this with my students, that is even far too low. That is set at like the minimum amount that your body is going to require to function. And we'll talk about it a little bit later. And like, yes, there's ways around eating that level of carbohydrate and still functioning, but it's difficult and it's not sustainable for most people. And so a lot of times, I mean, people need 200 plus grams of carbohydrates a day. I mean,
yeah.
And most of the time when I'm working with clients and doing that quick recall, it's like I'm eating less than 100, and we're tired, and we're wondering why we don't have energy. Yep.
And they are, if you are getting into the psychology of it with them, they also then are triggering these big cravings for carb-based foods, which makes sense because your body is wanting you to give it some energy. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about things like rice, bread, pasta, potatoes, those are generally the things people point to and say, well, I can't eat rice because then I start to gain weight. And so they cut it out of their diet.
Yeah. Psychology of, as we cut things out, that's only going to drive that factor of that desire more, which then leads to unhealthy relationships with food. So yeah, having a good relationship with all food, but also carbohydrates, because they get of foods, of the macronutrients. I mean, carbs and fats, it's gone back and forth between who's getting the bad rap. But
who's the demon?
Carbs is currently the demon, it seems like.
Mm-hmm. And it actually is really psychologically confusing, though, because there are things people see as benefits from going low carb. And we've talked about this in a previous podcast, but carbohydrates are stored in our body alongside of water, and water is heavy. So one of the really big things that people report when they cut carbohydrates out is very rapid weight loss, which generally, if depending on the situation, generally we aren't attributing that to any either fat loss or even just tissue loss in general, because the speed that it happens, it's not physiologically possible to have lost that amount of tissue, of body mass in that amount of time. What are some other benefits that you end up seeing people report from being low carb?
I mean, most of it does hinge on the like, well, I lost weight so rapidly, but that also means like the second you eat a carbohydrate, you'll also gain that weight back, usually if it's related to like a quick drop in water weight. There's a lot of like misconceptions and just like around these conversations with carbohydrates of like, well, what if I have prediabetes or diabetes, or I need to control my blood glucose or my insulin spikes. I need to eat low carb. And so that's also a common misconception, speaking specifically with like prediabetes and diabetes. Like a lot of people think, well, like I just can't eat carbs now. And that's not the case. We want you to eat carbs, and we want you to eat them at like a regular interval in a way in which is like sustainable for you, so that you're not spiking and like crashing like so frequently. And so that's a common misconception. Like you don't need to cut carbs to like improve diabetes or improve like prediabetes. It's more so of like understanding your reaction with carbohydrates and like, okay, like I, even if you don't have diabetes and we're tracking our blood glucose, but you know, if going on feeling like I eat this one carbohydrate source and I know 3 hours later, or, you know, I'm like ravenous again, or mainly like 1 hour later, you'd probably be ravenous again. But thinking about the way in which your body responds to foods is better than like basically saying like no carbs.
Yeah. And also using what we know about our physiology of pairing carbohydrates with something else to slow down, specifically with diabetes, we talk a lot about balanced intake of balancing the carbohydrate intake with other macronutrients, because then you don't see as rapid of a blood glucose spike, starting to learn those patterns. That rings true though for any individual that's consuming carbohydrates. That's why they're generally hungry in an hour from now.
I mean, if you just had a muffin for breakfast, and a lot of times you'll just feel really crummy in about an hour. And that's because it's just pretty much mostly carbohydrate, and your blood glucose is going to spike and it's going to crash because you don't have, you know, slower digesting a lot of like fats alongside, but a lot of protein alongside. There's no fiber within that. And so that's really where it comes into like building like an overall balanced plate, because that's what helps like overall. Right. It comes back to being the most like simple things end up being the most like helpful. And I mean, working with individuals, usually we set like baby step goals of like things that are like realistic and attainable and we can achieve in like 1 to 2 weeks time, and we can continue to build on those and like habits, versus like setting like these massive goals of just like, oh, cutting all carbohydrates, because then that's a massive change to your diet that also doesn't support you from a social aspect of like your friend wants to go out and have dinner or whatever. That's not going to be supportive. So one other area that I see a lot of confusion on is like sugar and cardiovascular disease risk. And it's like true for diabetes too. A lot of times we hear like sugar causes diabetes, sugar causes cardiovascular disease, when in reality, it's not the sugar itself, but rather when we are eating diets that are really high in sugar, oftentimes our dietary habits are also really high in like fat and really high in calories. And so a lot of the food that we're eating that has high amounts of sugar is more of those like packaged foods and sweets and things that are hyper palatable and are really delicious. And they just tend to be more calorically dense and energy dense versus like nutrient dense when we're thinking about like balance, like protein and fiber and all that kind of stuff that and vitamins, but they tend to be more energy dense. And so it's easier to overeat those things. One thing I always give an example with students is like, you don't see someone developing diabetes or cardiovascular disease from eating just fruit. Like you could eat a diet that's pretty much mostly carbs and sugar and not develop that, because alongside of fruit, you also have that fiber, which is going to give you that satiety. It's going to be pretty impossible to overeat fruit. And so you're not going to develop some of those same outcomes versus like if you ate a diet just in like sweets, like cookies and cakes and stuff like that, that are also high in fat, high in calories, high in sugar. It's really easy to overeat those things because they're not giving us everything our body needs in terms of like that satiety feeling. So it's easier to overeat that, which is then where you see the research tying the association between sugar and cardiovascular disease and sugar and diabetes. It's in a bigger picture. It's usually just like excess energy intake beyond what our body's needing.
And that's where fad diets like a low carb diet sometimes amplify what you're seeing for benefits, quote unquote, because when you start to become more mindful of, for example, I'm going to go low carb, in general, people start to intake less energy, intake less processed foods, get more of the micronutrients that their body needs. And that also contributes to weight loss where you know, swinging the other direction when you come off of that diet. If you haven't, one of the big things that I see as really important, especially when I'm working with people that are coming with the goal of what diet do I need to follow in order to lose weight, is being able to include those types of foods in your life in a way that is manageable for you, because swinging from one extreme to the other generally causes overconsumption and then regain of any weight that you lost when you completely cut those things out. So I think that exact like cycle that you just described is also why people see quote unquote success at the beginning. It's overall their diet pattern is more nutrient dense, and so they're not over consuming in general.
Yeah. And then one of the reasons a lot of times, aside from just not being sustainable, like, well, it kind of feeds into this, but one reason that we see like low carb diets fail so frequently and why they've reinvented themselves like throughout history is because you feel pretty crummy when you eat low carb. A common example of this that a lot of people will relate to or just have awareness of is like one of the popular low carb diets right now is the ketogenic diet. Which essentially, spoiler alert, most people that are eating a quote unquote ketogenic diet aren't actually eating a ketogenic diet and aren't actually in ketosis, but that's aside from the point, but, because they're just eating a low carb diet, and that's all, you know, I could tangent on that for forever. But when we're putting our body into eating that kind of lower carbohydrate diet, and with a ketogenic diet, it has to be really, really low carbohydrate, and also has to be, in order to get into ketosis, it also has to be lower in protein too, because protein can kind of throw you out of ketosis as well. Not lower, but moderate protein, not high protein, which is what most people are eating. But when you're entering the ketosis or just eating low carbohydrate, you start to deal with a lot of things that people mention, like brain fog, not feeling like any energy, feeling like they call it the keto flu. You feel just like really freaking crummy. And that just like a lot of people will be on, it takes a while to like a decent chunk of time to get into ketosis if you're actually getting into it. And so a lot of people within that time period that's going to actually take them to dedicate to get into that, where people are promising you'll feel good after you get into ketosis, a lot of people don't even make it that far because you're already feeling really crappy. And I mean, that's a sign that your body's probably not supposed to be doing this. Switching to utilizing ketones instead of carbohydrate or glucose within our body is not something our body's like ready to like switch to do.
Right.
And so it takes, I mean, it takes effort, and our body's kind of resistant to doing that.
And it really is supposed to be a fail safe in your body that we are able to use ketone bodies, because essentially the mechanism that switches that on most quickly is a starvation, like when we're in these maybe more extreme, a famine, that kind of thing, to sustain our bodies in an emergency situation, right? Mm-hmm. So that mimicking that starvation cycle, also what people don't understand is that our bodies are extremely smart and efficient. And so adding those things back in after you've had a cycle like that, your body is going to replete itself, store mm-hmm. the fat that it used to sustain you while you were in a starvation mode. And so you actually are kind of positively regulating a mechanism that's going to signal your body to store fat mm-hmm. while it's available yeah. in case the starvation time comes around again.
Yeah, which is where you get into kind of that yo-yo dieting and like weight cycling that actually sometimes a lot of people, it's very common that, you know, you'll go on a fad diet, you'll lose a portion of weight, you gain it back, but then you gain some. And that's mm-hmm. like from a physiological standpoint, you know, kind of a body protective mechanism of mm-hmm. like putting you at a higher set point to where that's protecting you from further issues, yeah. which weight cycling in and of itself has its own health complications.
And I was going to say the research that we have on this, weight cycling ends up putting you at higher risk for a lot of the chronic diseases that people are trying to avoid by losing weight mm-hmm. than just maintaining a higher weight status,
yeah.
you know, like being in a larger body, but being consistent and working on how can we prioritize nutrient dense foods in a way that's sustainable in our life. You have lower rate incidences of those chronic diseases that people are really, the fear behind it, the fear mongering that happens behind those fad diets is real, right? People are actually scared because they have family members that have had these conditions. They've watched someone, you know, pass away from heart disease or, mm-hmm. you know, diabetes out of control. Those things are real. Those things and are valid fears. But it also is not a basis for pushing people into doing a certain thing when they're not yeah. fully informed on all of the metabolic and physiologic impacts that they have.
Yeah. And something like one thing that's important to come back to, especially when you're talking about chronic disease risk, is that it's not the like the focus on just like weight loss for a lot of people to like improve chronic disease is not one sustainable, but each chronic disease that we're trying to prevent has ways we can assess. Like it mm-hmm. has blood levels we can look at. It has different parameters we can keep tabs on. Like weight's not really an indicator that those things are going to change. And right. instead of like focusing on just weight loss, focusing on the outcome measures of like, how's my blood pressure? How mm-hmm. are my hemoglobin A1C levels? What does my blood cholesterol look like? But right. also understanding that the way in which we also achieve those numbers and look at those parameters is through healthy behavior change and not mm-hmm. fad dieting, because you can lose weight very quickly in an unhealthy way and not see improvements in those parameters.
Right.
And you can also improve those parameters and outcomes in the absence and of not losing see- weight.
Yep.
Like, yeah. So
for sure. And I think that's the piece that has gotten lost in general, is that everything has become so centralized on just the weight as the indicator. And I'm not discounting at all that there are situations in which weight could potentially contribute to these things, right? We know that there's science behind all of the metabolic changes that happen in your body. But if we are only looking at one indicator of a disease, you can't diagnose anything off of one piece, right? Yeah. That's not how, as a healthcare provider, we have to look at the whole picture to figure out what's going on. And I actually think that quite a bit of harm can come from looking at somebody and just assuming that based on what their body looks like.
Oh, yeah.
They
We've
are
all
unhealthy.
Heard of the stories, like, or have experienced them of, you know, I mean, I've worked with clients so many times of, well, I went to my GI doc and I'm dealing with chronic constipation or dealing with this GI issue. And they told me to lose weight and come back to them. And because that would, it was related to weight. It's related to weight. And they give you a pamphlet and they're like, here's how to eat healthy. And then that's just not help. That's not helpful. And that's, we see a lot of that. And that really is why fad dieting and going on these diets is so profitable, because of the like confusion around like, and the focus on just weight loss for health.
Right.
When in reality, you can eat a low carb diet and be healthy. It's just not always sustainable. But also, it's just, it's, yeah.
Maybe if in a full assessment of what foods you really like and what foods you don't like, you end up eating in a pattern that is low carb, because naturally that makes you feel good, or that, like, that's the foods that you like. I actually have this conversation quite frequently with people that I see for nutrition support when they ask about meat as a protein source versus other foods. And really we end up in this discussion about, well, but what do you like? You're not going to force yourself to eat certain protein sources. You're not going to force yourself to eat carbohydrates of a certain type if it's not something A, that you're enjoying, that B, that feels good in your body, like you feel good after you consume it. So we have to explore all of those facets of the carbohydrate. So could someone eat a low carb diet and that be sustainable for them? Yeah, that's a possibility. Yeah. Could they be healthy because of it? Yes, that's a possibility. But the short-term success that people are tied to, which is the weight loss, it's overriding. Are they enjoying the way that they're eating? Are they able to participate in the things that they love in their life? And that is the piece that's unsustainable. Yeah.
So to kind of wrap up that section, TLDR, carbs are important. You should be eating them. If you don't, like, if you can eat in a way that doesn't, I mean, like, you should probably be eating carbohydrates. But, and then fad dieting and low carb diets are not sustainable, and they've reinvented themselves over decades, if not more time than that. And so we're going to talk a little bit about like just some examples of how the low carb diet has reinvented itself over time. Hope, what was one of the first ones that you can kind of think of? There's more than we would ever be able to mention, because there's, you know, new versions of this all the time. But what's one that commonly comes to mind that's like an older version of the low carb diet?
So because I work in peds, my actual like knowledge of the low carb diet, really truly that I can first think of, is the ketogenic diet, because early 1900s was actually when a low carb diet was first found to be effective in reducing epileptic seizures that were not responding to other forms of treatment for kids, mainly with kids. There were also like pros and cons of using certain medications for children. But so that's my real first, was from a perspective of working in a pediatric population. We actually use this as a therapeutic diet. And if you haven't heard us use that term before, I know we discussed what a therapeutic diet might look like in an earlier podcast, but therapeutic diet meaning we are intentionally altering what someone is eating with the intent of changing their metabolic and physiologic responses because of a disease state that they have. Mm-hmm. So with epilepsy, you know, if we're weighing the pros and cons for a child, if a medication's not effective and they are having seizures or breakthrough seizures through a medication, right? The risk of having something like fatigue, or what we called the keto flu earlier in this episode, compared to having breakthrough seizures frequently, that is a risk we are going to take. Okay, we have fatigue, but we're not having seizures. So the ketogenic diet is probably the first one that I can think of that I learned about from a PED standpoint.
But and it probably wasn't fad. I, to my knowledge, that didn't morph into the fad diet like realm until later on.
And actually, it was really confusing to me, because I think the first time that someone described it to me in the form of a fad diet was when I was teaching, because I had been, it was on the opposite side. Like my knowledge of it was so book driven. Mm-hmm. And in general, in a lot of these programs, we don't see as much, we see a lot of side conversations about fad diets, but not, you know, structured curriculum about fad diets. So it was a student brought it up to me that, you know, people are intentionally following a ketogenic diet. And I was like, wait a second, that sounds so unenjoyable. The kids that I've experienced having to go through, they're not enjoying it. Like, this would never be a thing, I don't think, but it is now.
I mean, individuals who have to eat a ketogenic diet for the purpose of managing epilepsy will tell you that it is not enjoyable and it is not sustainable. And the families that have to support children through that will tell you it is miserable, even like to help. Like, I mean, you can't do a lot of things. It's socially isolating. It impedes your quality of life. It's truly like kind of a last ditch resort management for that condition. And so, seeing that morph into like the fad territory, was like kind of weird to kind of watch. But again,
especially
quick fix of, you will lose a lot of water weight pretty quickly when you're eating no carbohydrates. So.
Yeah. But in my brain, when I was paralleling that, it's almost like someone saying to me, well, I'm eating a renal diet, you know, just for the fun of it. Just, and it's like, wait, I don't think that's very fun at all. Yeah. That was the parallel in my mind. But it is, I mean, so that anyways, that rabbit hole, but that was my first experience with it. What about you? How have you seen it reinvent itself, or where was the first time you saw it?
I don't know that it's like my first experience with it, but I definitely remember hearing like my grandmother and like parent, like mom, like mention like one that I never really looked into much, but it was called the cabbage soup diet. So basically, I think you just ate like mostly cabbage soup for like a long, it was definitely like fat. It's like epitome of fad diet, like unsustainable. Like no one is living, like you don't get all your nutrients from that. Like that is not sustainable. I don't even think it's meant to be sustainable, but I'm sure you could lose a lot of weight just eating cabbage soup. But like, I think a lot of us will laugh at it. Like even people that are fad dieting currently would look at that and say like, what is that? And like laugh at it. But hopefully a lot of us have the realization now that maybe in 20, 30 years, we'll look back at some of these fad diets and be like, what the heck were we doing?
Yeah.
So that's one of the first ones. The next one that I think that came after that, that's like, there's again, hundreds, but the Atkins diet has been like these, it's like, that's like the traditional low carb diet. That you think of. I remember.
And then the more, and then the morphology kind of off of that with more, maybe not as much low carb, but carb counting with Weight Watchers. That was really big when I was growing up, was, you know, and I think I'm not an expert on all of these fad diets, but I do think one of the things that you see in some of those diets is the explanation to the participants that if the carbohydrate is fiber, then that doesn't count. Yeah. So like that is an exception. Even though they're similar, there's always something that comes up that's like the new reason why this low carb diet is different. And even actually thinking of an even more, a newer one with the paleo diet or the caveman diet, those are kind of newer. Is the idea that, well, this one's different because this is how our ancestors ate. You know, there's always that one phrase that they're putting in of why this one's the low carb diet that's going to make a difference. So, and I think that really circles around into the fact that the diet industry makes a ton of money off of people when they sell these quick fixes.
And these get like reinvented again because people will point out like, hey, that's dumb. Or science will point out like, oh, that's not actually true. And so you'll find these diets reinvent themselves and be like, okay, well, we've taken that into consideration, but we still have like these in like kind of really rigid parameters around with specifically carbohydrate, but that applies to every kind of fad diet. And so they reinvent themselves because it is that short-term success. People have tried it. And they've been like, oh, yeah, it worked for me. And then it stopped working and then I gained more weight. And so that gets around. And then mm-hmm. people are like, well, this diet isn't sustainable. It doesn't work for most people. And then the diet industry is like, and we'll reinvent this because we know that low carb diets will lead to that very quick, rapid weight loss, even if it's not like fat mass that people are wanting, but because that sells. And like Hope got it, mm-hmm. it's like billions of dollars are made by yeah. the diet industry and like that, like kind of health and wellness sphere of like fad dieting. And mm-hmm. so it's just finding a way to reinvent itself means someone's going to make money. And so all of yeah. these diets have someone associated with it. It's not just like they're being put out there with no profit to be gained. Like there's right. all, there is something you can purchase, whether it's a book, a meal plan, foods. Like, I mean, even thinking about like the Atkins diet, there's still Atkins bars on like shelves oh, yeah. that are like low carb. Like bars to eat. People are still doing this. They're still making money, even though we've been kind of like moved on from that. Yeah. And so a lot of it really gets at like, it's a money making business.
So it's almost like sneaky because on top of that, because there's the immediate weight loss, mm-hmm. it's almost like the diet industry can convince the individual that it was their fault. Like they didn't yeah. stick to it long enough. They didn't have enough self-control, et cetera, mm-hmm. because you did have a little bit of success. You just didn't stick it out long enough.
Yeah. And then the really frustrating thing that you and I deal with a lot is with, and there's been articles that have come out recently being dietitians, like, we get flack for telling people to like, no, you don't need to go on this crazy diet. Just like, honestly, we get flack for telling people to do less, save your money, like all of mm-hmm. these kind of things. And we get like, you know, eating a balanced diet. Oh, we're promoting big food and like different like groups and organizations. When in reality, like that's a red herring. Like you're missing like who's really like causing harm and making a lot of money from it. And that's like the diet industry and like yes. diet companies. And so I feel like dietitians, and this is just me getting on my soapbox, get a lot of flack for like saying like, do less, like right. don't complicate it. And when mm-hmm. There was an article that came out recently that was just basically like dietitians are promoting like eating whatever you want. And it's just like, we're not really, but like, also, right. yeah. Like, yeah. also don't restrict yourself because we know from a psychological standpoint, we take nutrition counseling. We understand like this, like we're trained in this like psychology of food and eating. Like we understand that that's not sustainable and that's going to like mm-hmm. backfire for 99% of individuals. Like it's not going to work. And so that's my soapbox and I will step off of my soapbox now.
But I actually think that's a really good point because I don't feel like influencers who take brand deals with, you know, these companies that will send you certain meals in the mail or supplements or et cetera, that are associated with these low carb diets. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like those influencers catch as much flack because the fad diet industry in general, people are attached to the idea that, well, maybe this is the answer. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is the yeah. silver bullet or golden bullet.
And we're even seeing that now with like, aside from fad diets, with like some of the pharmaceuticals targeted at weight loss, like they can be very helpful for specific individuals, but we're seeing them morph into kind of, again, that fad diet territory. There were diet pills when I was in high school. And like, now we're just kind of seeing that again of just like people that are wanting a quick, they're seeing it as a quick fix and not like what it was intended to be, was for people that need help from a metabolic standpoint. Right. And so I just think people are attached to the idea that this quick fix exists, when in reality, like there's no quick fixes for like supporting your overall health. And if we're going to do it from a sustainable way, you want it to take time. You want it to have those like habits that you're building, and that's going to take time. It's going to take effort, and it's not a quick fix, but it's more sustainable. And so the time you're probably putting in is probably less because you're just going to do it and sustain those habits. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes a habit. So you're not like having to consciously do it. Whereas with these fad dieting, it takes up a lot of mental space because you're going on a fad diet. You're putting a lot of time and effort into learning about it, figuring out what you got to do, buying the groceries, doing everything, changing, overhauling your lifestyle for that to work for a few weeks. And then you go off of it because it doesn't work. You get frustrated, like maybe don't engage in some really healthy behaviors. And then we do it all again. And that's so much time occupied, like stressing about food, dealing about food. And that just doesn't reinforce a healthy relationship with food in your body.
Yeah. So one thing that we haven't really addressed that I'm want to see what your perspective is, if someone were to engage in a low carb diet and find that sustainable for them, that also means they're usually eating higher fat. What are some negative health outcomes that we see from sustained high levels of fat intake that could be harmful? Or maybe a more succinct way of saying that, negative, what are some net negative metabolic outcomes that could come from if this happened to feel sustainable for somebody?
Yeah. So the ketogenic diet is a really good example of that, because people are not, with the diet, you're not only eating really low carb, but the goal is to eat really high fat. The problem is not necessarily the fat. It's like what types of fat are we eating? And most people aren't. You could eat like a really quote unquote perfectly healthy ketogenic diet where you're getting a lot of mono and polyunsaturated fatty acids, and we're not eating a lot of saturated fats, and we're not getting any kind of residual trans fats from processed foods. But most people are eating diets that are higher in saturated fats and lower in our like quote unquote healthy fats. And so that is like decently linked to cardiovascular disease risk and poor health outcomes. And so that is one of the big things you have to think of with fat. It's not really, again, like carbs. It's not really the type. It's like getting at like breaking down these categories into like individual, more discrete components and saying, you know, well, like a really high saturated fat diet is probably not ideal, especially when it's coming from animal-based products. So that is really what I worry about with like high fat intake. For some individuals, it's not like the fat itself, but it's, are we doing this in like a healthy manner and eating the healthier types of fats?
Yeah. And I think too, the similar, like alongside, if we're having high fat and we're having low carb, in general, what I end up seeing getting missed is fiber from whole grains, even fruits being demonized. And I think one of the pieces that people don't realize is the very strong protective link that fiber has with cardiovascular disease and other GI condition, other like, you know, GI health type of things, which obviously you would be able to speak to more, but.
And that's one of the newest ways it gets at one of the newer diets that is on the market. And that's like, we've talked about before, the carnivore diet. And that's like high protein, high fat, essentially. It's not ketogenic per se, but it's low carb. It's another low carb diet, and it's low carb to even the extent which some of the other ones don't do, and that it demonizes fiber to an extent as well. And that really is your cardiovascular disease risk, because again, we could tangent all day about how beneficial fiber is for like our overall cardiovascular and gut health. But eliminating that is not sustainable or supportive of maintaining positive blood markers as we move into older adulthood.
Right. Right. Yeah. So if you're interacting with someone, I feel like we always end up in this little corner, but what are your recommendations if they're navigating and really wanting to prioritize their health?
Yeah.
How do you navigate that with your clients?
Well, I go back to the like stuff that dietitians get flack for. It's that like we simplify things. We find creating sustainable lifestyle habits that are sustainable. From a nutrition perspective, that's eating high fiber, but getting adequate protein, getting a variety of different fruits and veggies per day, making sure we have a solid amount of carbohydrates to give us energy. We're getting those healthy fats. And a lot of times the easiest way to do that with someone is to sit down and like, let's talk about building a meal. And we've talked about this before, but like carbs, protein, fat, and fiber, like let's start with that. and talk kind of about portioning and what we're looking at. And that's usually where I start for people. I mean, it definitely is, you tailor to the individual and there's, you know, preferences. But dietitians get a lot of flack again for telling people to do less and not stress about doing the most. But it's because those habits are the most sustainable and they're going to get people the biggest bang for their buck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think for me, the biggest shift that I end up counseling on is, of course, we do the balanced, you know, how do we build a balanced meal, et cetera, but also the shift away from using weight as the marker and using other things as the marker. And generally, like, clients leading this can very easily come up with other metrics for themselves. Like, if we are taking weight off the table as a metric, what is it that you want from your day-to-day life? More energy playing with their kids, you know, ability to, you know, maybe some people do have bigger goals, but maybe it's even just, I'd like to take the stairs and not get winded, which, let me just tell you, even if you use a Stairmaster all the time, you might still get winded when you go up multiple flights of stairs. But usually people can guide and give you ideas for, and give themselves ideas for metrics that are not weight related. Yeah. And that has also proven from my perspective to be helpful in sustaining, because even if the individual decides to still weigh themselves, decides to still track their foods, we can at least add in what are some other metrics that we can keep track of to help you keep a perspective on how this process is going for you.
Yeah. And so if, to kind of wrap things up for people, if you have questions about like chronic disease risk and building a healthy diet and want tools to navigate a lot of these things, and want the perspective of like a weight neutral, not weight centric focused approach of like, we're going to focus on the person and provide you with that support. We have a ton of resources over at grovenutritioncollective.com. We have a free version, which has some resources. And then we have a paid version, which gets you even more resources. And it's even things like recipes that are well-balanced. They have their carbs in them, we can promise you. But they really are, all of the resources we have are really targeted at supporting overall health and reducing chronic disease risk from the, without focusing on like fad diets and weight centric approaches. So highly recommend you check that out. If you have any questions, you can always find us here on the podcast. We will be back again to rant about another diet another day. If you ever have anything that you want us to talk about and rant about, we'd love to hear it. So hop over to our Instagram, at Decaf and Debunk, and let us know if there's anything there. But until next time, stay responsibly caffeinated and reasonably skeptical of nutrition and health claims you see online. Bye.